Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Vulture Capital, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Fall of Marcher Industries. I never set out to be a murderer. But then again, life has a way of pushing a man into corners so dark, so desperate, that the only way out is through blood and fire. You don't wake up one day and decide to kill. It creeps up on you, a slow sickness that festers in your bones, twisting everything you thought you knew about right and wrong. I was just a man trying to survive. A husband. A father. A worker at Marcher Industries for over 15 years. I wasn't special. Just another body in the machine, putting in my shifts, cashing my paychecks, and going home to my wife and son. The factory was never glamorous. Hard work, long hours, busted knuckles, but it paid the bills. Kept food on the table. Gave me a reason to get up in the morning. Until he came. Gordon Lasker. The corporate raider. The vulture who picked the bones of dying companies clean and left the remains for dead. It started with whispers in the break room, rumors about a buyout, an acquisition. We had seen it happen to other companies. Some New York suits would swoop in, shake things up, cut some fat, and then pretend they had improved things. But Marcher was solid. Family owned for generations. We were supposed to be safe. "We're not going anywhere," Mr. Marcher himself had told us in a company-wide meeting. He stood up there with his perfect gray suit and his polished shoes, promising that this company was built on the backs of hardworking men and women like us, and that he wasn't about to let it be stolen out from under us. Bullshit. 2 months later, Lasker bought the company out from under him. A hostile takeover, they called it. The ink wasn't even dry on the contracts before the changes started. New management. New policies. New cuts. It started slow. A few layoffs in the shipping department. A couple of administrative staff gone. No big deal. But then the real chopping began. Health insurance. Gone. Pensions. Wiped out. Overtime pay. Slashed in half. The guys on the floor started grumbling, but nobody really fought back. What could we do? The union was a joke, and anyone who did complain found themselves let go for one bullshit reason or another. Then came the real gut punch. A full shutdown. The official notice came in on a Monday morning. I walked into the break room to find guys staring at the posted memo like someone had died. Effective immediately, Marcher Industries will be closing its doors permanently. Final paychecks will be distributed at the end of the month. No severance will be issued. No further employment opportunities are available. Just like that, 15 years of my life were flushed down the goddamn drain. I remember the feeling, like a cold fist in my gut. I had a mortgage. I had bills. And most importantly, I had a son who needed food, clothes, and a roof over his head. "Motherfucker," someone hissed behind me. I turned and saw Tony Vance, a guy I had worked with for years. Big guy. Tough. But right now, he looked like he had been kicked in the teeth. His wife had cancer. The insurance was the only thing keeping her alive. Now, she was as good as dead. The room started filling up with guys, each one reading the notice, each one reacting in their own way. Some swore. Some laughed. That bitter, broken kind of laugh that comes when you realize you've been played for a fool. Some just walked away, dead-eyed and silent. I clenched my fist so hard my knuckles cracked. "What the fuck do we do now?" Tony muttered. Nobody had an answer. The aftermath. The first few days after the announcement felt like a slow-motion car crash. I went home that night and told my wife, Angela, everything. She sat there at the kitchen table, her hands wrapped around a cup of coffee that had gone cold. "What do you mean no severance?" Her voice was tight, but I could hear the panic creeping in underneath. "They're shutting everything down. No buyouts. No negotiations. Just shutting the doors." I saw it then, the way her shoulders slumped forward like something inside her had cracked. She was a strong woman, had always been the one to keep me steady when things got rough. But this? This was different. "What are we gonna do?" I had no fucking clue. We had some savings, sure. Enough to keep us afloat for a month or two, maybe three if we stretched it. But after that, I looked over at my son, Danny, sitting in the living room, playing with his toy cars, completely oblivious to the fact that our world was crumbling. He was 6 years old, innocent, and he had no idea that his father had just failed him in the worst way imaginable. Angela rubbed her temples. "You'll find something else," she said, forcing herself to sound hopeful. "You always do." I nodded. Yeah, I will. But the job market wasn't what it used to be. For the next few weeks, I hit the pavement hard. Sent out resumes, called up old contacts, even looked at jobs that paid half of what I was making before. Nothing. Nobody was hiring, and the ones that were didn't want a guy pushing 40 with nothing but factory work under his belt. The bills started piling up. The fridge got emptier. Then Danny got sick. The first cracks. He had asthma. Not severe, not something we couldn't manage, as long as he had his medication. But the insurance was gone. I remember standing at the pharmacy counter, staring at the price of his inhaler. $250. "Sir." The pharmacist looked at me expectantly. I swallowed hard. Do you have any generics?" "That is the generic." My mouth went dry. "Maybe you can apply for financial assistance." I forced a smile. Yeah, I'll do that." I left without buying it. Angela wasn't happy when I told her. "We'll find a way," I promised. "Just a few more weeks." But we didn't have weeks. The next time Danny had an asthma attack, it was bad. Worse than I had ever seen. He woke up gasping, clawing at his throat. Angela was screaming, trying to calm him down, but nothing was working. I ran out into the night, barefoot, desperate, looking for a pharmacy that was open. I found one, but I didn't have enough money. And that motherfucker behind the counter? He didn't care. "Sir, I can't just give it to you. It's policy. My son is dying. I'm sorry. I almost killed him right there." By the time I got home, it was too late. Danny was gone, and so was everything else. The end of a man. I buried my son on a cold, gray afternoon. Angela stopped talking, stopped eating. One day, I came home and found a note on the kitchen table. "I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry." She left. And just like that, my family was gone. Everything that mattered was gone. I sat in that empty house, staring at the walls, feeling nothing, until I turned on the news. And there he was, Gordon Lasker, laughing, drinking champagne, celebrating another successful acquisition. I gripped the remote so hard it snapped in my hand. My son was dead. My wife was gone. My life was over. But his was just beginning. That was the moment I knew. I wasn't going to beg. I wasn't going to suffer. I was going to make him pay. And I was going to do it with blood. Chapter 2, A Grave for the Innocent. I don't remember much of the funeral. The sky was gray, heavy, like it wanted to cry for me since I had nothing left to give. Rain had turned the cemetery grounds into thick mud, swallowing the soles of my shoes as I stood over the hole in the earth where they were putting my son. Danny was six. 6 fucking years old. Too young for a grave. Too young to be locked away in the dirt like he was nothing but a footnote in someone else's story. I should have been able to save him. I should have had the money for his medication. I should have been able to take him to the hospital, where some overpaid doctor could have hooked him up to a machine and told me he was going to be okay. But I couldn't, because a man named Gordon Lasker made a business decision that cut off my paycheck, my health care, my everything, and that decision killed my son. I should have been mourning. Instead, I was seething. The pastor's words barely registered. Something about peace, about God's plan, about finding comfort in knowing my son was in a better place. I wanted to scream in his face. What the fuck did he know about loss? What did any of them know? The handful of people who bothered to come stood with their heads bowed, offering quiet condolences they didn't really mean. Angela's family was there, throwing me pitiful looks, their eyes filled with silent blame. They hadn't even looked at me when Angela disappeared, like I had forced her to leave, like she wasn't just as broken as I was. Maybe they were right. Maybe she left because I had already started to become this thing, this monster I felt growing inside me. The thing that whispered in the back of my head every night since I found Danny lifeless in our living room. I wasn't a man anymore. I was something else. And as they lowered my son into the ground, I made a promise. I wouldn't let this be the end. The first step into darkness. After the funeral, I went home to an apartment that no longer felt like home. Danny's toys were still on the floor. his tiny sneakers by the door, where he always left them no matter how many times Angela told him to put them away. His drawings taped to the fridge, smiling stick figures of our little family that would never be whole again. I sat in the dark for hours, staring at nothing. Angela's note was still on the kitchen table, her neat handwriting spelling out her final words to me. I read it over and over, trying to feel something, but there was nothing left inside me. I picked up the whiskey bottle from the counter, took a long, burning sip, and turned on the TV. That's when I saw him, Gordon Lasker, live from some high-end gala, laughing, shaking hands, celebrating his latest victory. The news anchor's voice droned on about his brilliant financial strategies, about how he had acquired and restructured another company, boosting profits for shareholders. Acquired. Restructured. Those were just fancy words for what he really did, stealing from the working class and leaving them to rot. A group of men in tuxedos clinked glasses, their fake smiles plastered across the screen. And in the middle of them, Lasker stood, grinning like the fucking devil himself. That was the moment it clicked. The world wasn't going to give me justice. If I wanted justice, I'd have to take it myself. Tracking the vulture. I didn't sleep that night. I sat at my kitchen table with a notebook and a pen, writing down everything I knew about Gordon Lasker. Every news article, every interview, every piece of information I could dig up on him. I went online, scoured financial sites, and pieced together his empire. Saxon Equity. That was his firm. A powerhouse in corporate takeovers. They bought companies, broke them apart, and sold them in pieces, bleeding every last drop of profit before tossing the scraps to the wind. Marcher Industries had been just another meal to him. I found his schedule, charity events, board meetings, exclusive clubs where he spent his evenings. He was always surrounded by security, but everyone had a weakness. And I was going to find his. Finding an ally in hell. The next day, I went to see Tony Vance. He had worked the floor with me at Marcher Industries. Big guy, hands like cinder blocks. But when the layoffs hit, his world crumbled just like mine. His wife had stage 4 cancer. The factory job had barely been keeping them afloat, but when Lasker shut us down, their insurance vanished. She died 3 weeks after the plant closed. I found him in a bar, drowning himself in cheap whiskey. "Jesus, man," he muttered when he saw me. "You look like shit." I sat across from him. "Yeah, well, life does that." He grunted, took another drink. "I need your help." Tony let out a bitter laugh. "Help with what? Digging our own graves?" "No," I said, leaning in. "Digging his." His drunken haze lifted just a little, his bloodshot eyes narrowing. "Lasker." I nodded. Tony exhaled slowly, then looked down at the bottle in his hands. "You really serious about this?" "As serious as death." He looked at me for a long time, searching my face for hesitation, for doubt. He didn't find any. "All right," he said finally. "Tell me what you got." "The first strike." The plan was simple. Lasker had built an empire by stepping on the necks of men like me and Tony. But empires had cracks, and we were going to find them. We started small. I hacked into his firm's internal system. Not easy, but I had time. Pulled financial records. Found accounts they didn't want anyone to see. Offshore holdings, bribes, dirty money funneling through shell companies. It was all there, plain as day. Then we went after his people. His right-hand man, Simon Grant, an executive with a taste for things his wife wouldn't approve of. We followed him, caught him sneaking into a high-end brothel. A few photos, a little blackmail, and suddenly we had access. Through Grant, we got inside Lasker's world. We knew his movements. His habits. Where he went when he wasn't playing king of the world. We waited. And when the moment was right, we made our move. The message. It was a Tuesday night. Lasker had dinner reservations at the Lucent, a high-end steakhouse where men like him talked business over overpriced bourbon. Tony and I slipped in through the back. I remember the rush of it, the pounding in my chest, the adrenaline in my veins. I hadn't felt alive in months, not since my son died. But now I had purpose. We waited for him in the parking garage. When he stepped out of the restaurant, surrounded by his security, we made our presence known. A black sedan's tires screeched as it came around the corner, Tony behind the wheel. Lasker's bodyguards barely had time to react before I stepped out of the shadows, a baseball bat in my hands. I swung for the first guard's knee. The crack echoed through the garage. Then I was on the second guy, slamming the bat into his ribs before he could even reach for his gun. Lasker stumbled back, his eyes wide with terror. Who the fuck? I grabbed him by the collar and shoved him against the concrete pillar. He smelled like expensive cologne in fear. Remember Marcher Industries? I hissed. His breath hitched. I leaned in, my grip tightening. You don't know me. But you're gonna. Then I let go. He dropped to the ground, shaking, watching as Tony and I disappeared into the night. That was just the beginning. Because this wasn't about sending a warning. This was about starting a war. Chapter 3. The Wolves at the Top. I never thought revenge would feel this good. I had spent months drowning in grief, swallowed by the kind of sorrow that made waking up in the morning feel like a punishment. But now there was a fire inside me. Something raw. Something real. Gordon Lasker had spent his life destroying men like me, taking everything we worked for, leaving us with nothing but dust and debt. He thought he was untouchable, that the world ran on money and power, that men like me were nothing more than numbers on a spreadsheet. But I had proven him wrong. That night in the parking garage, when I grabbed him by his perfect, tailored suit and shoved him against the cold concrete, I saw something in his eyes. Fear. For the first time in his life, he was the one who felt powerless. And that was just the beginning. The aftermath. The attack made the news the next morning. Corporate executive assaulted outside luxury restaurant, suspects unknown. The article was full of sanitized bullshit, talking about Lasker as if he were some kind of victim. The police were investigating, security had been tightened, and Saxon Equity had released a statement condemning acts of violence against business leaders. I wanted to laugh. I sat in my apartment, reading the article over a cold cup of coffee. Tony was pacing beside me, rubbing his temples. This shit's gonna blow up fast, he muttered. Lasker ain't the type to let something like this slide. I looked up at him. I don't want him to let it slide. Tony stopped pacing and stared at me. You don't get it, I said. I'm not hiding from him. I want him to come after me. I want him to feel like he's in a fight for his life. Because he is. Tony let out a slow breath. Shit, man. He shook his head. You're past the point of no return, huh? I crossed that line the day my son died. Tony didn't argue. He just sat down, grabbed a beer, and cracked it open. All right, he said. What's the next move? The chain reaction. Lasker tightened security. Hired new bodyguards. Started moving differently. But no amount of money could stop what was coming for him. I spent the next few weeks picking apart Saxon Equity. I dug into every deal, every backroom handshake, every bribe. And the deeper I went, the dirtier it got. Lasker wasn't just a corporate raider. He was a criminal in a tailored suit. Money laundering. Fraud. Insider trading. Deals with men who made people disappear for a living. He had skeletons, and I was going to drag them into the light. The first thing I did was leak documents, anonymous tips to the press, whistleblower reports that painted Lasker as the corrupt bastard he was. It started slow. A few reporters picked up the scent, asking questions, poking around. Then one morning, the headline hit. Millions missing from Saxon Equity. SEC launches investigation into corporate fraud. Lasker was officially under a microscope, and it was only going to get worse. The meeting with the devil. The call came 2 days later. I was sitting in my car, watching the rain smear across the windshield, when my burner phone rang. I answered without a word. A deep, measured voice spoke. You made a mistake. I knew who it was. Simon Grant. Lasker's right-hand man. The fixer. Did I? I said, keeping my voice even. You think you're hurting him, but you're just waking the beast. I smirked. That's supposed to scare me? There was a pause. Then Grant chuckled. No. But it should. I let the silence stretch between us. Then, he made me an offer. Come meet me. No tricks. Just talk. Let's see if we can make this go away. I didn't trust him. But I went anyway. The underground deal. The meeting was in an underground parking lot. Dim lighting, no cameras. Tony sat in the car, engine running, ready to move if things went south. Grant stood by a sleek black sedan, his hands in his pockets, his expression unreadable. He wasn't like Lasker. He wasn't a soft, greedy executive who had never been punched in the face. Grant was a wolf, calculated, patient, dangerous. You're playing a reckless game, he said as I approached. I shrugged. Seems to be working so far. Grant studied me, then pulled out a thick envelope and held it up. $500,000, he said. You take this, you disappear. No more digging. No more games. I stared at the money, then back at him. And if I say no? His jaw tightened. Then you die. The words hung in the air. I didn't blink. I took a step closer, lowering my voice. I've already died once, Grant. His grip on the envelope tightened. Tell Lasker I'm not some desperate factory worker anymore. I'm his fucking reckoning. Then I turned and walked away. That night, the war officially began. The first kill. They came for me 2 days later. A black SUV, tinted windows, cruising past my apartment too many times. A couple of guys in dark suits sitting outside my building, pretending to be just another set of nobodies. I knew a hit when I saw one, so I set a trap. That night, I took a different route home, led them down an alley where the streetlights flickered just enough to cast long shadows. I heard footsteps behind me. Fast. Intentional. I ducked into a side door, hid in the darkness, and waited. The first guy came in fast, gun drawn. He never saw me coming. I grabbed him from behind, slammed his head into the brick wall, and felt his skull crack under my grip. The second guy hesitated, big mistake. I had his gun before he could even react. Wait, he started. I shot him in the gut. He gasped, stumbling back, clutching his stomach. I crouched down next to him as he bled out. Tell Lasker I said hello. Then I put a bullet in his head. The stakes rise. Tony and I knew what this meant. The bodies weren't just a message. They were an escalation. Lasker was going to come at us with everything he had now. And we were ready. I packed up what little I had, torched my apartment, and went underground. Started using fake IDs, burner phones, moving like a ghost through the city. Tony tapped into his old contacts, guys who hated Lasker just as much as we did. Former factory workers, ex-security, even a few corporate types who had been screwed over one too many times. We built a network. We weren't just two pissed off guys anymore. We were an army. And Lasker? He was running out of time. The final play begins. The plan was simple. We were going to gut Saxon Equity from the inside. We had leaks, access codes, and men in the right places. Lasker thought money could buy him safety. But money doesn't stop bullets. The endgame was coming. And when it did, I was going to watch that motherfucker burn. Chapter 4, The Slaughterhouse. Everything was in place. Lasker had spent his entire life destroying people, stripping their futures for profit, leaving families like mine to suffer in the ruins of his business deals. But he had never faced someone like me. Someone with nothing left to lose. The plan wasn't just about killing him. It was about tearing apart everything he built. I wanted him to feel it. I wanted him to watch his empire burn before I ended his miserable life. And tonight, the slaughterhouse doors would open. The setup. We spent weeks gathering everything we needed. Lasker had tightened his security after our last stunt. Armed guards. A panic room in his penthouse. Bulletproof cars. But no matter how much he spent, no matter how many men he hired, I knew one thing. Every fortress has a weak spot. And Lasker's? It was his greed. The man couldn't resist a payday. Saxon Equity was hosting an exclusive shareholder meeting at Saxon Tower, Lasker's high-rise headquarters in the city. The kind of event where rich men drank overpriced whiskey and congratulated each other on making billions off the backs of people like me. Lasker would be there. So would his partners, his security team, his entire inner circle. A building full of wolves in suits. And I was going to bring the slaughter to them. The infiltration. I wore a stolen suit. Walked through the front doors like I belonged there. The lobby was a monument to excess. Polished marble, chandeliers, security guards stationed at every entrance. Tony was watching from across the street, ready to cause a distraction if I needed one. I walked up to the check-in desk, handed the receptionist a fake ID. Mr. Daniels, she said, scanning the list. I don't see your name here. I leaned in. Smiled. Check again. Slipped a $100 bill across the counter. She hesitated. Just for a second. Then she took the money, nodded, and handed me a guest pass. That's the thing about people who work for the rich. They're just as desperate as the rest of us. I took the elevator up to the top floor. That's where the real monsters were waiting. The slaughter begins. The penthouse conference room was filled with men who had no idea they were already dead. They were laughing, drinking, shaking hands over their latest successful acquisition. Another company gutted. Another workforce thrown to the streets. I stood in the doorway for a moment, taking it all in. Lasker was at the head of the table, his silver hair perfectly combed, his suit probably worth more than what I used to make in a year. He hadn't seen me yet. I stepped forward, my fingers tightening around the gun hidden under my jacket. A waiter passed by with a tray of champagne. I grabbed a glass, kept walking. Lasker looked up. his face twisted in confusion, then recognition, then fear. "You," he breathed. I smiled. "Me." Then I pulled the gun and shot the man next to him in the head. The sound was deafening. Blood sprayed across the table, across the plates of expensive steak and half-filled glasses of wine. For a second, nobody moved. Then, chaos. Screams. Chairs scraping against the floor. Men diving for cover. Lasker stumbled backward, knocking over his chair. Security. But security wasn't coming. Tony had taken care of that downstairs. I fired again, hitting another suit in the chest. He gasped, fell face first onto the table, knocking over a bottle of wine. I moved fast. Grabbed Lasker by his collar, yanked him toward me. "You don't look so fucking powerful now," I hissed. His eyes were wild, darting around the room, looking for a way out. But there was none. "Please," he gasped. "I can pay you, whatever you want." I laughed. I actually laughed. "You think this is about money?" I shoved him toward the window, pressed the barrel of my gun against his forehead. He was shaking. This was the man who had ruined lives, who had destroyed families, who had killed my son with his greed. And now, he was nothing. A pathetic, sniveling rat, begging for his life. The other executives were still cowering in the corners of the room, too scared to move, too scared to speak. I could kill him right there. End it. But that wasn't enough. No, he needed to suffer. I yanked him away from the window, threw him onto the conference table. Then I took out my knife. The fall of Gordon Lasker. I carved into him slow. Not deep enough to kill. Just enough to make him understand. He screamed. Begged. Tried to make deals, to promise things, to buy his way out of the hell I was dragging him into. Nobody came to save him. His partners, the same men who had built their wealth alongside him, just watched. Because that's how men like them operated. Loyalty was nothing. Money was everything. And Lasker? He was just a bad investment now. I leaned down, my face inches from his. "You think you're a predator?" I whispered. "You're not. You're prey." He whimpered, blood dripping from his mouth. I grabbed him by his tie, dragged him toward the window again. The city lights stretched out below us. 30 floors up. I pressed his face against the glass. "You see that?" I said. "That's the real world, Lasker. The one you never gave a shit about. The one you've been feeding on your whole life." He sobbed. I kicked the window. The glass cracked. I kicked it again. And again. And then. It shattered. Wind rushed in, carrying the sounds of sirens from the streets below. I turned back to Lasker. He knew what was coming. "No," he whispered. I grabbed him by the shirt. "No," he begged. I dragged him toward the open window. He deserved worse. But this? This would do. I pushed. He screamed. And then he was gone. The final exit. The sirens were closing in. The penthouse was a fucking bloodbath. I turned to the surviving executives, still frozen in their seats. They didn't say a word. Because they knew. They fucking knew. I nodded. "Enjoy your retirement, gentlemen." Then I turned, walked out of the room, down the stairwell, out into the night. By the time the cops arrived, I was already gone. A ghost. A shadow. A hunter with nothing left to lose. Lasker was dead. His empire would crumble. His partners would turn on each other, like rats trapped in a sinking ship. And me. I wasn't finished yet. There were more like him out there. More vultures. And I was going to hunt every last one of them. Chapter 5. Blood debt paid in full. Lasker was dead. His body had splattered onto the pavement in front of Saxon Tower, his lifeless form lying in a pool of blood, shattered bone, and broken arrogance. But my war wasn't over. Killing him was just the beginning. I stood on the rooftop of an abandoned building across from the chaos, watching the flashing red and blue lights, the swarm of cops trying to control the scene. The news was already spreading. Gordon Lasker dead in apparent murder at Saxon Equity headquarters. The vultures in the media would be circling soon. Investors panicking. Stock prices plummeting. Executives scrambling to cover their asses. Exactly what I wanted. I lit a cigarette with shaking fingers, the adrenaline still roaring through my veins. I had done what I came to do. I had ripped his empire apart from the inside, gutted him like the pig he was, and thrown his worthless body to the streets below. But there was one thing I hadn't counted on. I had kicked open the doors of hell, and now? Hell was coming for me. The aftermath. Tony and I went dark. We burned our phones, ditched our IDs, moved like ghosts through the city. Every news station was running the same story. A brutal, calculated execution, a corporate tycoon murdered in cold blood. The cops? They had nothing. No witnesses. No security footage. Nobody willing to talk. Because even in death, Lasker was hated. But Saxon Equity wasn't dead yet. And I should have known better than to think his wolves wouldn't come looking for revenge. The first warning. It happened 3 days after the killing. Tony and I were holed up in a rundown motel, living off black coffee and gas station sandwiches, waiting for the dust to settle. Then, just after midnight, the first shot came through the window. Glass exploded. We hit the floor, rolling for cover as bullets ripped through the cheap wallpaper, shredding the bed where we had been sitting just seconds before. "Fuck," Tony roared, pulling his gun, ducking behind the dresser. I crawled toward the door, heart hammering in my chest. They had found us. More shots. Then silence. I peeked through the shattered window, catching a glimpse of a black SUV speeding off into the night. They weren't just after us. They were hunting us. Tony wiped blood from a shallow cut on his arm, breathing hard. "They know who we are." I nodded. "And they're not going to stop." We had two choices: run and spend the rest of our lives looking over our shoulders, or fight. Tony grinned. "Guess we're fighting." I grinned back. And then we went to war. Burning Saxon Equity to the ground. We hit them first. While they were still scrambling to organize, still trying to track us down, we struck back. Lasker's death had left a power vacuum at Saxon Equity. His second-in-command, Simon Grant, was trying to take control, trying to calm the shareholders, trying to clean up the mess. We didn't give him the chance. We hacked into their servers, leaked every dirty secret they had, money laundering, offshore accounts, fraudulent contracts. We exposed them all. Within hours, Saxon Equity was in free fall. The feds were kicking down doors. The stock price collapsed. Executives started flipping on each other, selling out their own people to save their own skins. The empire was crumbling. But there was one last piece left to burn. Simon Grant. The final confrontation. Grant was smarter than Lasker. More ruthless. More careful. He had a dozen bodyguards, a bulletproof car, and a private jet ready to take him out of the country. But we had a plan, and we had nothing left to lose. The trap. Grant was holed up in his penthouse, a goddamn fortress of glass and steel. But even fortresses had cracks, and the crack was his greed. We hacked his accounts, drained them. Millions vanished overnight. And when Grant saw his empire collapsing, he made one last desperate move. He called his dirty banker, trying to shift what was left of his fortune into a safe offshore account. He arranged a meeting. And we were already waiting for him when he got there. The final bloodshed. The underground parking garage was nearly empty. Dimly lit. The perfect place for a hit. Grant stepped out of his black SUV, flanked by bodyguards, his expensive suit looking out of place in the dirty, oil-stained concrete. I stepped out of the shadows. His bodyguards died first. Tony took out the first with a silenced round to the skull. The second barely had time to turn before I buried my knife in his throat. Then it was just me and Grant. He backed up, hands raised, eyes wide with terror. "Look, we can talk about this." I laughed. "Talk? You didn't want to talk when your fucking company stole everything from me." He swallowed hard. "It wasn't personal. That set me off." I lunged, grabbed him by the collar, slammed him against the SUV. "Not personal?" I snarled. "You killed my son, you piece of shit." His lips trembled. I didn't kill anyone." I slammed his head against the car. "You stole our jobs. You took our insurance. You bled us dry. You knew what would happen. And you did it anyway." He whimpered. "Please. Just let me go. I'll disappear. I swear." I pulled my gun. Pressed it to his forehead. "You don't get to disappear." And then I pulled the trigger. The last goodbye. Grant's body hit the pavement, blood pooling around his head. It was done. The last of Lasker's empire had fallen. And me? I was free. Tony and I left that night, disappearing into the shadows, ghosts slipping through the cracks of a world that had never wanted us. We had no plans. No futures. Just the satisfaction of knowing that the men who had destroyed our lives were burning in the ruins of their own greed. And for the first time in a long time, I could breathe. Epilogue: A World Without Vultures. A year later, I stood on a beach, watching the waves crash against the shore. I wasn't the same man I had been before. I was something else now. A ghost. A myth. A warning. The world would never know my name. But men like Lasker? They would remember my legacy. Because the next time some rich bastard thought about gutting a company, about leaving families to starve just to line his pockets. He'd have to wonder, what if someone like me was watching? What if the next vulture was the one who got hunted? The end.